right, the study tonight is in the book of Exodus. I love Leviticus, the 11th chapter. And during the study, if you'd speak a little louder than usual because of the fan tonight, to make it comfortable in here, the noise goes on the recording. What we'll do is have a reading of the first section, which is 8 verses. And Sister Judy, if you read 4 verses, and then Sister Alpha the next 4, and we'll stop there.
And the Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying unto them, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, These are the beasts which ye shall eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. Whatsoever parteth the hoof, and is cloven-footed, and cheweth the cud among the beasts, that shall ye eat. Nevertheless, these shall ye not eat of them that chew the cud, or of them that divide the hoof, as the camel, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof. He is unclean unto you.
And the coney, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the hare, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the swine, though he divide the hoof and be cloven-footed, yet he cheweth not the cud, he is unclean to you. Of their flesh shall ye not eat, and their carcass shall ye not touch. They are unclean to you.
Has anyone the Revised Standard Version on verse 4 pertaining, or 5, verse 5 pertaining to the coney? Read it, please.
And the rock badger, because it chews the cud, but does not part the hoof, is unclean to you.
All right. In other words, the Revised Standard uses the word rock badger instead of coney. All right. Now, you would wonder, now, what spiritual value would you get from a study of this nature, you would think, ordinarily, in reading that. And almost all Bible commentators, if they cover this particular portion of the Bible, these verses, would probably say, invariably say, that the main purpose of this distinction between clean and unclean beasts has to do from the standpoint of health, that these other animals are unclean, and that in eating them there are certain dangers that you encounter that you wouldn't in eating a lamb or a beef, normally speaking. And so they think of these prohibitions and these permissions, being one for the clean, one for the unclean, that that's the primary circumstance why they were recorded here, as a matter of sanitation, cleanliness, health, and so forth. But we have, in previous studies, have endeavored to show that all these matters in the Old Testament, while they do have literal values, that the Apostle Paul gives the clue in the New Testament in which he says that these were really types. He doesn't use that language. He does with regard to services, saying that the tabernacle was a shadow of good things to come and so forth. But when he mentioned about marriage, be not unequally yoked, and then he linked the ox and the donkey, which have a different tread, and gives that a spiritual connotation and says, in effect, pertaining to two instances in the New Testament, that when he put them together, that he says in effect that these were altogether written for their spiritual meaning, which would mean that they certainly have a sanitary value, but that would be purely secondary. So what others would make important, we are more or less minimizing in this study, because the other aspect is not discussed in any book that we know of, which we will now consider to this evening. Now, in reading this account, there are certain impressions that you get just from a superficial reading. First, in these eight verses, what category did they fit? It pertains to
beasts of the field.
All right, beasts of the field. Because if you've read other parts of the chapter, you see there are fish and birds and other things, but these are like more or less domesticated animals, let's put it that way, that ones that are more or less commonly seen around the homestead. Now, with regard to these animals, beasts of the field, we notice that there are two categories, one being clean and the other being unclean. But in order to be clean, we notice what? We make certain observations.
It has to have a cloven foot and it has to chew the cud. A divided hoof, cloven.
All right. Well, the cloven footed is the same thing as the dividing of the foot. But with some animals, the dividing of the foot, there's a very hard cuticle involved. So you call it a hoof, where with other animals there's relative softness, and then you think of it cloven-footed. Two things are essential. To be a clean animal, two things are necessary, and they are the dividing of the hoof and the chewing of the cud. Now, with regard to the unclean, we notice that one thing is common to the categories given. In either case of the unclean that are enumerated, what was it, the camel, the coney, the hare, that I'm speaking the King James. The problem there is...
It's missing one characteristic.
It's missing one characteristic. In other words, instead of having the two essential things, it'll have one. And some have one in chewing the cud and not dividing the hoof, and another will divide the hoof but not chew the cud, and both are unclean because they only meet one condition. Now, let's what is one that's unclean that chews the cud? Okay. Then... And that would be in verse... the coney or badger. Instead of saying rock badger, we'll just say badger. And most of the pictures, if you see them, I think in Bible dictionaries, it does look more or less like a badger, but not quite like the ones here in America. A little more elongated as a rule. Now, but... It's interesting of one unclean animal of which the scriptures commonly speak is the swine. And when we look at the swine and it designates that as an unclean animal, it tells us that the swine does divide the hoof but does not chew the cud. All right, now we more or less now have been superficially indoctrinated as to distinctions that are made in the letter of the word that we've read. We can see this categorization. But now we're interested as to what is really the significance of chewing the cud and dividing the hoof. We may have to do it in steps and stairs, as it were, but let us take one. The dividing of the hoof.
Yeah.
Well, say it loud. That's all right.
Rightly dividing the word of truth.
All right. Rightly dividing the word of truth. The division of truth. And as a principle, it does not necessarily have to be just in two dividing, but it can be cloven-footed. And the reason it says cloven-footed, that makes it a little bit bigger category. Because some animals are split a little more. But cloven-footed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And incidentally, it's interesting that in the first volume, Pastor Russell emphasizes the fact that the reason that most nominal churches do not have the truth coming from them as a, is because of this failure of rightly dividing the word of truth. Now, what is the usual problem with not rightly dividing the word of truth? It's like the application of things in the Bible that are stated, and you know they're true, but they are misapplied in what way? Usually to the wrong age or the wrong world. You can't apply millennial scriptures to the present gospel age. That's why the nominal church has the priesthood and a hierarchy and a pope, because he's assuming the titles and prerogatives of Christ, which he's going to exercise in the kingdom age, and they're making it apply in the present age. Things like of this nature. So these scriptures can be absolutely true, but if you have the wrong age involved or you don't have a conception there, you can misapply them. Right now, we'll come back to this again. Now, the other one has to do with the chewing of the cud. What would the chewing of the cud?
Well, if you guys allow the dividing of the truth along the lines of the cloud book, then I think the chewing of the cud would be to consider the scriptures from all around before you speak.
Well, that's what you should do, as far, especially if one is to be a teacher. They should be certainly a little above the average. I mean, otherwise, if they're below the average, or if they're the average, then they should be strictly a chairman and nothing else. Yes?
And I know that the cow does this.
Yes.
And they get the full benefit of the food by regurgitating whatever. And that way, when we do that, we would not only develop, we would develop spiritually and morally in every way. We would apply truth in our lives.
All right, let's take the cow, which you bring up as an illustration. When you see a cow in the field, it collects grass with its tongue and rough, and it does not immediately appropriate that food into the bloodstream. It collects it into what is called a cud. So happens a cow's cud is quite large, but you have that with other animals too, and birds that have the same characteristic. Now, depending on what kind, what creature you're talking about. Now, they have then, you might say, a first stomach and a second stomach. The first stomach, which is called the cud, the purpose of that is what?
Like a storage bin.
All right. Like a storage bin. That's where it's collected. But in order to get it in there, there has to be some chewing. It has to be broken up and brought into this first stomach and packed there. And then usually the cow will lay down, cross its legs, and regurgitate the food that's in with like saliva and enzymes and regurgitate it up into its throat and mouth and then chew it a second time. But in the second time, it takes quite a bit of time, and you can see the mouth and the way it's sidewise and so forth. That food is ground down really fine, and then it goes down into the second stomach, the normal stomach instead of the cud, and then it is assimilated. And thus gets, like it is with humans, it gets into the blood stream through another process, digestive process and so forth. All right. Now, in the first case, if the cud is the collection bag, is the storage bin, whatever category, we have a scriptural demonstration of this. With regard to humans and with regard to the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There are different approaches, and we could approach it from the way you're stating it, but there's a very good illustration.
Would it be the thought of Bereans being more noble? They heard the Word first, but then they searched it.
They received, they heard it willingly, what Paul said. They listened attentively, they collected the information, and then later they searched daily the scriptures to see if the things that the apostle told them were true in harmony with scripture, even though he was an apostle. And he commended them for that. Well, then this is the thing. They collected the material. If they had a prejudiced mind, it would not get in there. They would miss a tremendous amount, but they willingly received it. So this second, this regurgitation of that which previously was received with an open mind and an honest and humble mind, then the second chewing, as it were, is a ruminating, is a masticating of that food, and to see if it's harmonious, it's really the Word of God, and then it's swallowed proportionately. And we have a scripture along that line with regard to the reception of truth. To prove
all things and hold fast to that which is good.
You prove all things, but you hold fast to that which is good. That's the part you want to get into the bloodstream so that you might grow strong, spiritually speaking. So you can see that this is discussing a general principle. And these animals, and in the next stage, it will be seen that the various animals portray characteristics in the human family, both good and bad and very bad, depending on what creature you're talking about, and will be in an eternal lesson for all future ages, that when they know this subject at that time, it's not even known now, but when it's known then, it will be a benefit to mankind. So you can see there's a lot to... You say, oh, you're going to be bored in the future. I'm speaking about the world. Sometimes you'll witness to them, oh, the wonderful kingdom age and how healthy, no sickness, no death. So, and they'll say, well, wouldn't that be boring? Or something like that. Well, actually, they have a very low concept of the things that God has in reservation for those that love Him, even with regard to mankind. All right, now, the next thing we notice that in these two categorizations of chewing the cud and dividing the hoof, the one pertains to the... All right? One pertains to the feet, and one pertains to the mouth. And but we speak normally in the with, but this division has to take place before the foot is of any value. What value is the foot in the walking if it is not cloven footed? And the same with the chewing. What good is that unless it's in the cud and in connection with the parting of the hoof? Now let us then consider another thing. Take the camel, for instance. It says here that the camel, he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof. And there are good things about an animal, but the camel is an unclean animal. Oh, another thing, before we get... This subject is big. And being this is an introduction, we're dwelling a little longer on it because we're trying to establish predicate principles before you go into the detail. What's good going in the woods if you don't have some idea of the lengths and breadths, as it were, of what you're examining before you even get into the detail? All right, now, and the next fact is that when it says an unclean animal, that does not mean that it's so obnoxious that whenever you see it in the Bible, oh, that's bad. But actually, sometimes the unclean animals are used by God and by Jesus Christ as having certain good qualities, and the others are forgotten. Even the serpent, we are told to emulate. Be ye wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. Another place about a lion. A lion fits the category, we find out later on, of unclean animal. And yet, we're to be bold as a lion. So when we think of clean and unclean animals, we have to think of them strictly in conformity with the setting of this chapter. This is as food. It's not discussing it from another standpoint. When you speak of the eagle, it's wisdom. But an eagle is unclean. But the Lord's people are likened to eagles, eaglets. So, but that's not talking about the animal or being as a food. It's talking about a cardinal attribute possessed that is worthy of emulation. I'm shouting tonight because I usually do anyway, but because of the windstorm that we have here with the fans. Now, notice, let's take this, look at the swine. He divides the hoof and is cloven-footed, and yet he not cheweth not the cud. Now, what is this saying about a swine? We read in the scriptures, in the New Testament, for instance, about the bad quality of a swine as it is used with regard to ones who formerly were Christians. And what is like an illustration?
They wobble back in the mire.
Yes. It's, like in Jude or some other book, you'll find that the swine was delivered from the mire, came out of the mire, but there are some who, after having been cleansed and come from out into to Christ and accept Him as their Savior, that have a relapse and go back into the mud and the mire. Well, that class are likened to swine, because actually what has happened, they, in that returning and wallowing in the mud, it shows that they really did not assimilate the truth, chew it, so that it became a part of their nature. The nature that they had was a swine to start with, but it's supposed to end up not as a swine, to end up, it's supposed to be a new creature, a new development. So from one standpoint, all the world, to some extent, are swinish. We ourselves, before we came to Christ, where we are in that category that Paul speaks of in Psalms, or David, that there's not one clean, no, not one. All are born in sin and in shape and iniquity. But being called out to the Lamb, to the truth, to the Lord, these are, we are to have a change of character, a change of nature. And these former characteristics are to be shunned. But being we have had these in the past and have we continue to struggle along these lines, our hope is to be changed from that. And so these pictures help us to see what the Lord does not like, especially when we get to some others. We see some of the little traits that are commonly seen around that we're to watch out for. All right, but now we're only getting into the first, like the ABCs, the introduction of this particular study. So the swine does not really change its nature. It's swinish, it stays swinish. It really, the conversion is superficial, not made a part of that being. And the dog to its vomit. Now we've got to treat this from another standpoint. We've gone a little bit into the detail of land or beast of the field. I think that's the way it opens up, something like that, the categorization. These of the beast of the field or something like that will be clean to you, and then it enumerates, and of course we know some of them are. I mean, we know, we're very familiar, even without a knowledge of the Bible, certain foods that are very beneficial. But certain other foods, like pork, which is swine, pork, you can get trichinosis. The hair here that it speaks of, you can get the rabbit's disease called trichinella, which can get into the muscles and so forth and cause problems. We just mentioned that. Now, the camel, I don't know what disease you get from that because we don't have many of them over here. But in foreign countries, if you were familiar with them, you probably would know, because they do eat camel's meat quite frequently. in the Mideast, but there would be certain dangers that would have to be circumvented. When you know how to prepare the food, you can eat pork because you know how to prepare it. But if you just eat it without that proper preparation, for instance, cooking it, if you do not cook pork, we're getting into a culinary study tonight, but it's well, just as well that you think of this subject in a little depth, a little breadth, and then it you retain a little more value from that which you read. So the care has to be exercised with regard to the eating of unclean meat, where with the clean meats, you don't have that problem, generally speaking. Maybe today because of chemical pollution. But in old times, normally these were not dangerous animals at all to eat. But now, in this here, from the Christian standpoint, the distinction is to be made between the clean and the unclean, with the thought being that we should have nothing to do with the unclean, right? It says, this shall be make a difference unto you. You ought to make this difference between clean, but it's speaking along spiritual lines. That's the prime, and that's what Paul says all together. It has to do with spiritual. So that now with spiritual things, these are then, in this picture, food. The use of beasts of the field as food. Therefore, in reading this account, with all these variations and discussion of characteristics and so on, what is that telling us with regard to another thing? We are, spiritually speaking, what we eat. This is spiritually speaking. We are what we spiritually eat. What we feed upon will affect our character. And if we dwell on whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are just, faithful, true, and all the noble, and all these various things, if you're thinking these thoughts and you keep your mind filled with that, it's bound to have a cleansing effect on the person. And so in this distinction between the unclean means that the Christian, in feeding on these animal thoughts, that he is to make a distinction between that which is good and that which is not good. And when we look at humanity and you see human beings, like the pastor writes in one place, that there is some of the divine image in all mankind, almost even in the most depraved, but the spark gets less and less to be seen. As the more and more corrupt a person is, the harder and harder it is to see that there's anything good in the individual. But normally speaking, in the average person, there are commendable traits. So it'd be like, in effect, saying that that which is good in man is worthy of emulation. And that which is not good, which is carnal-mindedness and maliciousness, that is not to be fed. So now we get a lesson. When we begin to read about these clean and unclean animals, with this preamble or introduction, and then we begin to go down the line, we can begin to see what this discrimination is, what this distinction and the purpose of it between the various animals. Now, this has been a long introduction. And so first, before we proceed to the next category, are there any comments, observations, questions?
Is that why you did this man who was very mad, who was uncontrollable, and have Christ have his Satan out to the swine, and there's a lot of swine that killed that story?
Yeah, well, that was the demon-possessed men called, in one account, the Gadarenes. They were possessed by, one of them said he was possessed, my name, he said, is Legion. Because there were thousands of fallen spirits in one person. It's hard to imagine that. But showing it's like a computer. Just like in a computer, you can cram all kinds of information, and that information does things. So with regard to fallen spirits, they can miniaturize themselves. if you so desire the likeness, down to microchips in a human being. And that microchip has a memory, a system, a whole world in itself. That's why these computers today have billions of complex problems that they can analyze and solve in a matter of seconds with regard to flight trajectory and other things that are very practical, but not to the ordinary citizen. So that in casting out those demons, they went into the swine, and it tells you the number of the swine, and some of them went into all these swine and then drove them in madness down to the sea, so that the people, in losing their very livelihood on that side of the sea, which is the eastern shore, would get mad, infuriated with Jesus, perhaps even stone him. But that was the objective, that they made as though they, well, we don't want to go out into the void. Please, won't you, can't we go into these animals? They didn't want to lose some kind of a medium or some kind of a contraption to work. They were losing this home of these two individuals. And he listened to them and let them go. Well, of course, the Lord knew all about this. And they weren't really designed to be called in the final analysis when we look the matter over. He spoke to that class or area in connection with his Perean ministry, P-E-R-E-A-N, and as a part of his Judean ministry, certain section, where he covered and ministered to the ones he was looking in those territories, but not when he was up in Galilee. When he was up in Galilee, he had another purpose in mind as regards to the territory he was operating, the most of the time 3 years. Yes?
Was that Sister Chai's question, or was she asking, were the swine chosen specifically there because they're unclean animals? Was that what you were
to know? Not necessarily, but let's see if there's a clean animal. The serpent was possessed in the Garden of Eden. The horse or donkey was possessed in connection with Balaam's ass. This case here was swine. Now, let's see, is there anything else? I can't offhand think, but it would seem to indicate that the unclean animal was chosen. I don't see that as a necessity, unless there's something that I'm not aware of that would be a prohibition with regard to being possessed in that fashion. But it's an interesting observation, because hereafter, we're going to be noticing that when we read.
See. Yes. They petitioned the Lord to go.
That's right.
They asked him.
That's right.
He didn't initiate the thought faith. This fallen spirit has to go into the fire.
We had mentioned that, but maybe too fast. All right, now, if there's no question, let us proceed then to the next series, which starts with verse 9 and ends with 12. Next, please, sister. Dolly.
These shall be of all that are in waters. Whatsoever hath fins and scales in the waters, in the seas and in the rivers, that shall ye eat. And all that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, of all that move in the waters, and if any living thing which is in the waters, they shall be an abomination unto you. They shall be even an abomination unto you. Ye shall not eat of their flesh, but ye shall have their carcasses in abomination.
One more.
Whatsoever hath no fins nor scales in the waters, that shall be an abomination unto you.
All right. Now, this has to do with marine life, aquatic life. Fish are now being categorized as to that which is proper to eat and that which is improper. Incidentally, these laws were given to natural Israel. They were not given to spiritual Israel. So we don't, for instance, in the gospel, you don't read of this except in one case, that in connection with the letting down of a sheet out of heaven, when Peter had a vision in Joppa, and the Lord was preparing him to go to Cornelius, he let down a sheet of unclean animals, and in the dream asked Peter, "Arise and eat." He said, "All my life I've been making a distinction. I haven't eaten anything unclean." But in the vision, he was instructed to do that. And so what happens? He wakes up, and of course, that's a very strange dream. In fact, one who is conscience-stricken, it would be like a nightmare, that type of a dream, because it involved his conscience. And then there's somebody knocking outside at the gate, and who is it? These emissaries that were sent by Cornelius, because he had a dream in which he was to send somebody down there to get Peter to come up to speak the word of God. But here you had unclean animals coming down, and he's instructed to eat. So here in the New Testament, the play is not on literal fleshly animals as a literal food, but is used in a symbolic sense. It has a symbolic connotation. And we don't find these prohibitions along this line, whether it's drinking of wine or not drinking of wine, or whatever. Except if for an elder, he's not to be given to wine in a general way. He can have wine, but it has to be with great moderation. With those who were a deacon, if they imbibe a little bit too much, you think, well, then you question whether they should even be a deacon, see? So it's played down in the New Testament, but it's not the spiritual. The spiritual is another matter. All right, now we have fish. Before, it was the cloven foot, the divided hoof, and the chewing of the cud. In this categorization of fish, it was what?
Fins
and scales. But we'll notice in each case it's two. And it's interesting, too, out of the mouth of two or three witnesses, a thing is established. Well, here's two. You see the multiple two used frequently. To be a rounded-out character, you have to be balanced in connection with the things you do in being to mature as an acceptable Christian to God, to meet that highest category, to be of the divine family. That's out of this world in more ways than one. Now, here, fish, fins, and scales. All right, let's take the fins. What's the fins for?
Locomotion.
All right. And also, they're like a steering, as to which way it goes. It's a motion involved. There's a thrust, like the tail wiggling, provides propulsion. But the fins, some of them don't move too much, but they can control the speed, the direction, and the other parts. Look, so this would correspond in the first category with that which is used with regard to the feet. That's right. This is only in the marine animals. They don't normally have feet or cloven feet. They normally have fins. So. Now, then the scale, that helps us to narrow that down. The scales somehow have a co-relationship with the chewing of the cud. And what does the scales do?
They're a form of protection. I think we'll put on the whole armor of God, right, which is rather comprehensive. Faith, righteousness, and so on.
Right.
So it would be how you apply the principles.
Or like in Ephesians. In Ephesians, it tells us to put on the whole armor of God, but that's not just a simple statement. It'll say, for instance, let's say, the helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the sandals of peace. So there are various things that are comprehended in this protective armor. It has component parts. And so the scales are multiple. The scales, but they cover the body of the clean fish. So this characteristic. Now, when it says in the seas, rivers, and waters, what's the difference between, let's take the The hardest one first. Waters. Because you know what a sea is. Because, well, back there in the tight...
A lake or a pond?
...would be a very small lake or pond, because normally the sea is a bigger body of water, normally speaking. When they say Lake Ontario or something like that, Lake Erie, in Old Testament times, that'd be an ocean or a sea, especially because of its size. But when you go to countries that have only the smaller ones... It would have to do with something that's not a sea and not a river. And normally you don't see fish in springs. But what you do see sometimes is that just below the spring, where the spring empties out, that there's sometimes freshwater fish in a little, cove or something, that you can't call it a lake even. It's so small. So in waters, it would have to be deal with springs, but not a large enough body of water to be called a sea in the Old Testament usage. Yes?
I'm just thinking, that even our fellowship, even in the smallest gathering, even say in our home, or if we expand it to a bigger group and so on, it should still be amongst those who are... spiritually craving to see the Lord.
Well, that principle would be true based on other admonitions of Scripture. In this particular instance, you have both clean and unclean in the sea, rivers, and waters. So the distinction is what swims in there, and as a food. We always have to keep that in mind as a food. And to feed upon such characteristics in our thinking. In other words, when you read or meditate or pray or whatever your mind is preoccupied on in moments of leisure, generally speaking, has to do with the formation of character to a greater or less extent. Now, one thing we noticed in reading this account about the different fish that stands out prominently, that is sort of like a little emotional thing in there. It sounds like an emotional count.
About not touching the carcass in the dish?
Yeah. Well, let's see. 10th verse. After speaking about the rivers, waters, so forth, they shall be an abomination unto you. They shall even be an abomination unto you. It's mentioned twice. In other words, that extra one there is meaning that many people are just readers. But actually, the Word of God, you have a motion here. He is giving a commandment and a distinction between that which is clean and unclean. And then he says, these shall be an abomination. These shall even be an abomination. It's like a repeating with emphasis. And being it's there, it has a purpose. And what is it that's to be the abomination? Whatsoever hath no fins nor scales in the waters, that shall be an abomination unto you. Any questions or comments before we move to the next one?
Well, Frank, that all the fish that didn't have these would be considered scavengers?
Yes. Well, usually that's what they are. They're scavengers of some kind. But actually today we eat many of these fish. They're the canned products that we eat. There are very few that relatively are clean, like salmon would be another matter. So. But tuna... and swordfish, but this is spiritually speaking, of course, and we're eating these things like we eat pork or anything else. But and catfish, they're like scavengers too.
Salmon?
Salmon's or no? No, I didn't. I say salmon is clean.
Okay.
That's
dolphins. Do dolphins have fins? They don't, do they?
They have. They have.
Yeah. Oh, they have scales.
No scales, no.
They wouldn't be scavengers.
I'm not saying they necessarily are. It's just here it does. Yeah. It does begin as we go down the grades here. It then begins to go into the evil characteristics. For instance, when we started, what was it? Land animals or beasts of the field. It doesn't say because the swine wallows in the mire, we have to read into it based on other scriptures what a swine is. But not in itself. It just is like an unemotional characterization. This you eat, this you do not eat. But as he goes down, as we go down the list, and we get into some of these other categories, there are certain characteristics that become more obnoxious as we enter into the lower echelon of the animal life. Whether it's flesh animals or fish or whatever.
But of course, the very fact that that God makes these distinctions just means more responsibility for man in his own walk. And he just uses the animals like a teacher uses a blackboard chalk, makes illustrations. Because some of these animals, like dolphins, are very intelligent. Of course, that's not supposed to be eaten, but some of that fish. I think he loves all the animals, but he's just making his illustrations.
Well, that's what we've been saying. We've been saying that with the majority, they have a purpose of teaching the lesson. And yet he turns around and takes the good characteristics and utilizes them, showing that the Lord is not so prejudiced, as it were, in teaching us, don't have anything to do, or you don't get any lesson. Now, there are certain lessons that you can get from observation of others. Some even say, like with the devil, his persistency. Remember, that was what one said to another party, Christian. You always see good in everybody. Now I'll put a question to you. Seeing you do this all the time, what about the adversary? And then that was his answer, and that was put in the reprint. His persistency. You know, in hounding a person. That driving persistency is a characteristic that can be helpful. We call that tenacity, a driving force. But for what? That becomes then the important issue. For what is the driving force? That's another matter. That's the thing that is so important.
Well, Frank,
yes.
As you start making the separation of the waters and seas and rivers, is there a...
Well, no, I just mentioned that normally, when you think of that, take a spring, starts. The spring is a rivulet of water. And it starts, comes out of the ground, and it makes these little rivulets and little pools, but they keep going down by gravity, and it joins another spring. Water from another spring and another spring, and what happens, these little rivulets collect into what we call a river. And then the river empties into a lake or a sea as its, like, destination. So it's showing from the process of beginning to end. But now a fish can be in the lake. He can swim up the water, up to the spring almost, in some cases, right up to the source. So that's why you find some in the waters that you would not normally find. It's because they backtrack, going upstream, as it were, to the source. Whereas they incubated, if you might use that word, or were generated in the larger body of water, a larger river. Or...
Of course, in Israel, there are a lot of springs, like they're in the middle of fields sometimes. I don't know if they'd be fishing them, but they'd use the fish in their own country.
Yeah. Well, you see, you have some springs that are so far below ground that their level isn't high enough to spill over, so that you have to draw from them like a well. But normally you think of a spring as that which is bubbling over or thrusting out water, and it does get to the surface and out. So it helps to see that this, when he's speaking about fish, he's speaking about freshwater fish, and he's speaking about saltwater fish. But that'll be more apparent later on. We're only starting, see. So when you get to certain categories, then we have to backtrack, as it were, to make a finer inspection. And ye shall not eat of their flesh, but ye shall have their carcasses in abomination. So that which is unholy or unpure should be distasteful, obnoxious to a Christian. Well, now let's go to the fowl of the air.
Now these are they which ye shall have in an abomination among the fowls. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The eagle and the ostrich, that is,
yes.
And the ostrich, and the vulture, and the kite after his kind. Every raven after his kind. And the owl, and the nighthawk, and the cuckoo, and the hawk after his kind, and the little owl, and the
cormorant,
and the great owl, and the swan, and the pelican, and the deer eagle, and the stork, and the heron, after her kind, and the lapwing, and the bat, all fowls that sing.
All right, let's stop there, because this is a very long category, and here is a natural division which is not indicated in the Bible, because these particular ones that are coming next creep on the ground, while the others don't normally creep. But we notice something, and rather than to discuss each particular fowl, maybe a little over half of them I know quite a bit about, but I certainly have not made a study on every single one in depth. But there are certain things you can see what is meant. In other words, in law, in order to understand how to apply legal rules, the rules are laid down and statements are made, a code of commandments. But in connection with the Code of Commandments, the Lord gives illustrations of how to apply those principles. And that's what we read or studied in previous lessons. What do you do in this situation? What do you do in that situation? And these situations that are enumerated, which we previously have studied in the book of Exodus, are sample cases wherein you derive certain lessons that are helpful, so that when you come to a situation that is not recorded in the Bible, you can, from what you have already learned, begin to make a distinction as to what the lesson or meaning is in this new situation. So now you have many birds mentioned here, say 10 dozen maybe, and by listing them and telling what is not clean, we begin to see a certain pattern. And now, what is that pattern? Notice here, it doesn't say fins or scales. It doesn't say chewing the cud or parting the hoof. It just says, these are unclean. But why? All right. In other words, they are carnivorous.
And they're not eating the fresh meat all the time.
Right. They're birds of prey. And, of course, being carnivores in that sense that they eat flesh, whether it's carrion or dead meat or whether it's live meat, it's still carnivorous, the eating of flesh. And this is a bird. These are birds that are doing it, and they're birds of prey. Now, here, this is the... And one other.
Birds of the night.
Birds of the night, many of them. Not all, but this is another distinction. Many of these are birds peculiar to operating in darkness, such as the owl. You don't see owls flying around in the daytime. And the bat. These are not. So now we begin to see another categorization that employs another method, but is really teaching Very similar principles. Birds of prey, then, have an objective of using somebody, capitalizing on somebody, for their benefit, for their destruction, for the destruction of the one and the aggrandizement of the other. And so this selfishness, this manifestation of disregard and feeding on others in this way is the lesson. They are birds of prey, hunting others. They're not certainly sheep or a cow, which is so very docile, and that and they're not a dove. So we can begin to see that there are certain birds and animals that have a gentle disposition, generally speaking. Of course, this Christian is not only to be gentle as a dove, but bold as a lion, wise as a serpent. So we're only getting little fragment lessons, but if we didn't know anything of this, we are, I think, missing something. If you don't know or have never studied this before or gotten the lessons from it, you are missing something, whether you appreciate it or not. So that in this study, even if we only glean 5% of its true meaning, it's an addition. It's an addition to our understanding of God, what he likes and what he doesn't like. Yes.
Why then does he make man an animal of prey?
What?
Why does he make man an animal of prey? He preys upon the dove, gentle dove. That's been tricky.
Yeah. So this would be a categorization of night, birds, and birds of prey. But now, there are others, of course, that would be clean, such as the pigeon, the dove, things like that. But you see, there are not too many birds that are edible in that, that are permissible in connection with their eating. And the swan is a beautiful bird. The eagle is admired in certain parts. The Lord's people are to be like an eagle. Far vision, hungry for truth. But this has to do with food. And it's this aspect of being preying on somebody. P-R-E-Y. That's bad. P-R-A-Y is very good. Now, we come in verse 20 to another delineation with regard to fowl.
Yes. We first discussed spiritually what birds of the night represent, what evil characteristics.
Well, birds of darkness and those that, that is their realm. Now, you take the world. There are many. We call them night owls. Why do you call them night owls normally? Because they carouse at night. They go to all-night dance parties and all, and you cannot do that sort of thing and be untouched. You become one of the crowd by joining in such... it's all done for self. And eventually, they step and crush one another because each one has self in mind in connection with whatever their pursuit is. In fact, that's the philosophy of the day. What you like... you partake of. Don't worry about any prohibitions. But that should be very obviously in the wrong because you have to step on somebody else in connection with those pursuits. Right away, it's a harmful philosophy. Even without the Bible, it should be, from the standpoint of common sense, a thing that will take a nation down, will degrade it. Not only morally, spiritually, and physically, they become degenerated. So, the nightlife then would be under the influence or the power of the adversary. He's called the Prince of Darkness. These birds, which predominate at night, would be those who are more, to a greater or a less extent, influenced by the Prince of Darkness or by others. Then you have like mediums, seances, things like that. These are performed in the dark. Satan cults. And generally, these cults operate at night. Their performances and their sectionalizing of people, I mean, bisecting them and whatnot, in their orgies or in their ritual, this is all done clandestinely. For public scrutiny. Let's go now to another category, but first, now, let's see, that would be 20 through 26.
All fowls that creep going upon all four shall be an abomination unto you. Yet this may eat of every flying creeping thing that goeth upon all four, which have legs above their feet, to be withal upon the earth. Even these of them he may eat, the locust after his kind, and the bald locust after his kind, and the beetle after his kind, and grasshopper after his kind. But all other things, all other flying, creeping things which have 4 feet, shall be an abomination unto you. And for these it shall be unclean. Whosoever touches the carcass of them shall be unclean until the even. And whosoever beareth aught of the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. The carcass of every beast which divideth the foot and is not cloven footed, nor cheweth the cud, are unclean unto you. Every one that toucheth them shall be unclean.
All right. Now here, these are still in the category of flying things. But the difference here is flying things that are not just mostly in the air, but are found frequently walking on the ground, creeping on the ground. And it starts out with a category that of many of such creatures, or fowl, whether they're fowl, that they have, the ones that are clean, have 4 feet. With a distinction.
They have legs so they can leap.
All right. The 4 feet are 2 pair of legs. 2 times 2 is 4. And they're creeping on the ground, but they have one of these pair of legs is higher than the other. And this shows that they're not always creeping along the ground, because that creeping along the ground, that's dangerous to start with, because you're apt to get contaminated as you creep along the ground. But those flying things that can jump withal, which can propel themselves up in the air and then fly, those additional legs, those legs which push out with a muscular action to push them from the earth, to thrust them into the air, suggest an effort to not grovel in earthly things, but to have a desire for higher things. And this capability of jumping up higher is what makes flying things that have 4 legs, that if 2 of them are higher than the other and they can jump with and so forth, that then that's another matter. They can be clean. And of course today when we look at these clean flying things, and you think of locusts and beetles and grasshoppers, these would be probably the last things that an American would want to eat. But yet they have plenty of protein and have plenty of food value. And many live on this as a diet. John the Baptist, for instance, ate locusts. Not a locust tree, not fruit from a locust, but he ate locusts dipped in honey. So he had the sugar and the sweetness, plus the nutritional value, but we normally don't think of it that way. Incidentally, if you went on tours, say, 20, 25 years ago, you would see in many countries strings of the locust hanging 10, 15, 20 on a string. And you go to the market and you buy them. Like you buy beads almost, but it's food. And you'd go and they'd be stored there and per string, so much price. And but here you don't see that. In fact, here not too long ago they had supermarkets that had some of these things that are partaken of in the Orient in cans. And when you'd read the title, you see, it's because of our training, you'd if somebody opened that for you, your stomach would probably do a reverse a flip because of the nature of ants, for instance, or in you could buy the ants in one little. I remember one supermarket had quite a number of them here, but it didn't go over too well here. Well, certain of the populace, yes, but they wouldn't eat the others. And caterpillar, I remember when I used to break some of them and saw what was inside, I would think that's the last thing I'd want to eat, but they would think of it as a marshmallow almost. I mean, it'd be nutritional. But it has its value, and it's because of our training. So it mentions the different locusts, but basically locusts and beetles and grasshoppers. And there are a variety of strains of these particular flying things, which creep upon all four, but have this capability of jumping and flying, because a locust flies, a grasshopper flies. But when a grasshopper flies, he's so heavy, his body, and the way he's shaped, like a tank, and he's pretty heavy. So he uses those legs to get up as high as possible so that his wings, even though they're long and relatively strong, when he flutters them for a while, he can only go a certain distance because gravity pulls his body down. His body is more dimensional, higher of a heavier specific gravity than the wings are able to support for any length of time. But that effort is appreciated, spiritually speaking. So the Christian, being born of woman, being born and shapen in iniquity and sin, in connection with his, as a part of humanity, that we show the Lord the earnestness of our desires to please him by the efforts we make to please him and to do his will. And he knows we cannot do perfectly, but that he appreciates the effort, and that effort is accredited as under Christ's arrangement as doing the will of God and acceptable to him, and is a reasonable and acceptable sacrifice in the sight of the Lord. Where were we? So, now, in verse 24, it says, "For these ye shall be unclean. Whosoever toucheth the carcass of them shall be unclean until the even. And whosoever beareth aught of the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even." Now he's talking about the flying, creeping things, which have the 4 feet, but who do not jump withal. They do not make... These are the other four-legged flying, creeping things that are not acceptable in the Lord's sight. And the touching of the carcass of such, one becomes unclean.
Would that be like a flying squirrel?
Yeah, it could be, yes. You see, this is only sample cases where you take that which you learn, and this squirrel is really a rat. But we don't think of a squirrel that way, but they really are. Only has a nice furry tail, looks good, and is a little tame, and is a little wise, and looks like a pet. But there are other problems with them. Now, in the...
Why is this onto the even?
All right. Because of what? Back now, we're talking now when we read this of what God did with regard to the nation of Israel, regarding literal, these literal things, not the spiritual, because that which was spiritual had not yet come. The antitype or the significant was, these are just the groundwork of literal pictures. But now back there,
they were not permitted in the camp until they were cleansed.
All right. In other words, let's take, we're talking now about the unclean animals, insects, birds, so forth. That the carcasses of them, right? Then it says to, oh, who beareth the carcass, or toucheth the carcass of them. Now, the thing is, you might have something land on you, and you might have to wash your clothes every day in certain areas because of the nature of the insects. But the dead, the carcass, you're talking about the dead ones that become, because sometimes, take even like a horse or a camel. Don't you sit on a camel? You sit on the camel trap. The camel's an unclean animal. Well, it's unclean from the standpoint of eating, but it's not unclean to ride it. But if the animal dies, the dead animal, that's another matter. That's a carcass of the animal. You see, there's so many things that have created difficulties with the study of this sort of thing that the concept of a spiritual application is far remote because of the complexity of the problem. But actually, the Lord goes by rote. It's like drumming it in. And he's given this illustration, this illustration. And so if, to get just a fragment of its content is potent. It has a, you can see the depth of the wisdom of God, and that in the creation of these, there was a purpose. Where normally, if you thought of it from a human standpoint, you say, why this, why that? Because this is obnoxious, or this has this trait. And you, if you were selective, you'd have a completely different universe than today. But these things will be under control in the future, and will there, the object lesson will be seen, the characteristics that are employed. Yes?
Do verses 24 and 25 show degrees of contamination? Because you could accidentally touch a dead a carcass, and that isn't as severe as if you willfully pick one up and carry it.
Well, I would say, if you had a dead carcass touch you, you'd be unclean. But now, what does it mean unclean? You could not go, for instance, you couldn't go into the tabernacle service. You'd have to wait. If you're unclean to the even, the tabernacle isn't open in the evening, hasn't any evening hours back there. It was like morning and afternoon. So you'd have to wait till the next morning. And the next morning, then, you automatically, it's a different situation, because the sun arising, it's a new day, and that's the kingdom. When the sun arises above the horizon, mankind is considered unclean until the sun comes over the horizon. Not just the dawn, not the midnight to six, but from the six on, that's the morning. But one is theoretical, one's practical. This is talking about the practical. So when the sun arises in the new day, the kingdom is established, then you have a different situation. Mankind has been forgiven in Adam, and the any punishments that they might get is to the degree or extent of willfulness in the crimes or deeds that they had done. But as far as Adamic weaknesses, that's another matter. So they start with a clean slate automatically because of the payment of that invisible ransom. They're not even aware of what's happening. The legal aspect of it is accomplished. They come, they've been, it's like getting a reprieve from the governor. Some people are prisoners for years, and then all of a sudden somebody comes with a pair of keys and opens the cell and says, you're free, and that's the last thing they ever dreamed of. They thought they were lost, gone, and forgotten. But what has happened on the outside, something happened, somebody came into power, some new emperor, and he wanted to create goodwill, and issues an edict, all prisoners in the prison of a political character, or that they are now, as of now, to be released. So they have nothing to do with the release whatever. So were the man the kind. They have nothing to do with their release. And they and then when this new day arises, they have been technically, as it were, given a reprieve. And now comes a new method of instruction.
Right.
Yes?
Maybe I'm not getting the point, but in verse 24, to touch a carcass, you're unclean till the evening. But if you bear the carcass, you're not only unclean till the evening, but you have to wash your clothes. That's saying, does that show degrees of contamination?
Yes, yes, that would. Because one, it doesn't say it touches your clothes. And washing the skin. If one lands on your wrist, you wash your wrist. But that doesn't mean you have to take all your clothes off and wash your clothes because it touched your wrist. But if it touched your clothes and is involved in that, that garment has to be worn wherever it touched and to the degree it touched. Yes, there'd be degrees. But being unclean, there would be certain things that would be similar. Whether it's lesser or greater extent, the unclean technical aspect remains the same. That is not different degree. The different degree has to do with the extent of the washing. With the cleansing, but the technicality of being unclean, that's the same. It's like Paul says, if you break one of the commandments, you're guilty of all. Well, you only broke one, but you're under the law, you are held as criminal, you incur the penalty of the law. This is what he tells in the New Testament. So from a technical standpoint is what he is emphasizing. So from that standpoint, there's no difference. But from a practical standpoint, yes, there is degrees of difference with regard to sin. So some will give a sermon on sin, sin is sin no matter what, and they make no allowance for any degree. Well, that would be wrong too. You have different extremes. Yes.
Well, in 26, it says the carcasses of every beast which divideth the hoof and is not cloven foot. It seems to make a difference there. And in the Revised, it's even stronger. It says every animal which parts the hoof but is not cloven footed or does not chew the cud is unclean to you. It divides it into two parts as though it were two different things.
It is true. I explained before what a cloven foot and a divided hoof are two different things. I mentioned that, but in principle, they're the same. In other words, an animal that chews the cud, he does one. He either has the cloven foot or the divided foot. But the cloven means split, but there are different types of splitting of the foot. Like a chicken is clean, but you look at a chicken. Its legs are not. It isn't like this.
Well, you're saying it could be either or.
Yeah.
But here it's saying if they are cloven footed, let's see, if which parts the foot but is not cloven footed, it's unclean.
But it doesn't
so it can't
chew the
be
cut.
One
yeah,
the
it
other.
Doesn't say chew in the cut. That's right.
And the cut is unclean to you.
And is not cloven footed nor chew at the cut. In other words, there are many clean animals that do not part the hoof because they don't have that type of hoof, but they're cloven-footed. There are some that are cloven-footed that don't part the hoof in the normal sense. If you look at the type of legs they have, you look at a horse, and it's, you know, it's all shielded in front and rounded. It's not parted.
In other words, they have to have both. They can't just have one of those.
Yes, they can have one.
Well, this one, unless the Revised is not correct, it says every animal which parts the hoof but is not cloven-footed is unclean.
No, I don't think that's the thought.
Because
otherwise
point,
you'd have to have three things.
It's the point that it doesn't chew the cud would make it unclean, regardless
right.
of what the
That's
hoof
right.
situation is.
It may seem, if they don't have the two characteristics, they are unclean. But it mentions this parting of the hoof, you have a problem because of certain animals do not part it the way we normally think of. When you look at a cow, for instance, there you can see a distinction one, but there are other animals that have a different type of feet, and yet they're clean. It's like we say before, all fish swim, John swims, therefore John is a fish. No, that doesn't make sense. It takes a little thought on this. This you have to take afterwards and think about it more to get the concept. It's not as easy to explain it.
Can you give an illustration of a divided hoof versus a cloven foot? An animal, say.
Well, there's a chicken.
That would be the cloven?
Yeah. And it has a cut. As a cut, they chose the cut.
So a cloven foot couldn't have a divided hoof, is that what you're saying?
But a divided hoof is a cloven foot, but a cloven foot is not necessarily a divided hoof. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's one thing, all fish swim, John swims, but therefore John, that's a wrong reason.
Would you mind repeating that?
The animal that has a divided hoof, that divided hoof is a cloven foot. But there are a variety of divided hoofs that don't look like a hoof. Has a different appearance, but they're cloven footed. So a divided hoof is cloven footed of a certain kind, but there are many other kinds. But that which is cloven footed is not necessarily a divided hoof. Because that's only one little one category.
Okay.
Yes.
What does cloven mean to you?
A split, parted.
So it could be something that doesn't have a hoof at all, to be
that's
gentle,
right.
Soft, but it's divided.
That's right. But even the parted hoof is cloven foot. But you see, it depends how you look at it. Well, you're way past the time. We have to then conclude. Because we've covered quite a bit as it was on this subtopic. So we'll just end with a word of prayer.